Welcome to our podcast series. We will discuss now the issue of Russian disinformation campaigns and other related topics with Todd C. Helmus, Senior Behavioral Scientist at the RAND Corporation. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
So, what threats do Russian disinformation campaigns pose to national security in the United States and Europe?
Well, based on evidence from the U.S. election in 2016, as well as the European Union parliamentary election and others, we're seeing very strong Russian efforts to use social media to try and influence, not only influence the outcome of those elections, and when I say influence the outcome, not only influence how people vote, but attempting to suppress voter behavior, which is sort of well established in the United States. But then, as part of this content, they're attempting to do other things, right? So including broader efforts at fragmenting society. And in the U.S., examples of that, there's content arguing for Black Lives Matter, content arguing for Police Lives Matter, efforts to sort of create separate or foment separate camps within American society. Even in Ireland, they're apparently trying to sow diffusion by promoting Catholics and Protestants against each other and trying to disrupt that society. So that's a key goal. And they're also trying to promote broader distrust in institutions. I think the more that they can build distrust in facts, in reality, in who am I listening to, who am I talking to, are the elections real, are the elections not real, all of that serves to weaken sort of a key fabric of society, which I think is to Russia's advantage. And then, of course, there's sort of broader efforts, and maybe this is more for Europe, but, you know, efforts to weaken connections between some European states and their members and the European Union, efforts to foment distrust and disconnection between Russian nationals who live in Eastern Europe in places like Estonia, Latvia, and Ukraine, and the European countries to which they belong, as well as to broader NATO and Europe. So all of that is working, I think, to fragment societies, to, which would be, I think, their goal.
So you mentioned elections and efforts to intervene during the elections, but does this phenomenon can be also effective during day-to-day interactions between human beings, between parts of the society, and the efforts to divide the society by concentrating, for example, on special events, dramatic events that occur during political processes or even during deterioration of the security conditions in a certain state. Are there any other forms of intervention that the Russian disinformation campaigns are focused on?
Part of the challenge, too, with this is that we don't even, I think, fully know the extent of Russia's efforts or other state efforts, for that matter. You know, it all sort of hinges on our ability and oftentimes the ability of Facebook or Twitter to detect this content and to raise this content in the public sphere. And so I think we're still lacking on the true potential extent of the ability of Russia to influence different sectors of society.
Okay, let's speak about efforts to counter disinformation campaigns. What, in your opinion, are the most effective methods that states like the United States and European states use? And are there any ideas about how to improve these methods?
Yeah, I mean, I think the challenge here is what are the effective methods? And I don't think we know really what are the effective methods. I think the first order of defense is the platforms themselves, right? So we're sort of hiring off our defense to Facebook and Twitter and hoping that they have our best interest at heart and are seeking to and undertaking significant efforts to identify this content on their platforms. So obviously, you know, Facebook recently identified and removed various different pages that Russia had been using to influence different states in Africa, populations in Africa, with the notion that that was sort of a Russia's testing their tactics out for potential Western as well as maybe even Israeli elections per se. But anyway, removing the content is key. I think Twitter's prohibition of not accepting political ads may be an interesting first start on some of this areas, because, to the extent that Twitter is in fact able to remove political content from their advertising reams, then I think it takes away one potential tool from away from Russia in that regard. There's also various techniques, and I think the question of how effective these are is unclear, and they're certainly long-standing initiatives, right? So trying to improve journalism, improve investigative journalism, mm-hmm. Especially in areas like Eastern Europe where there might not be a culture or a capability of investigative journalism to sort of identify unfacts as they are. Expanding local content in some of those areas. So like my study is on Russian influence in Eastern Europe, and so I think along those lines. But, Russia owns a lot of the content, Russian language content that's being streamed out to populations in Eastern Europe. So finding alternative ways of having Russian language populations gain access to their content. And I think more broadly, the United States and Europe and elsewhere is this notion of media literacy. So can we build resilience in our population to identify facts, to prioritize facts over feelings or anecdote in performing analyses and doing analyses or looking at public policies. And it's just, thinking about just being able to judge the content that you're sharing with your friends. And this is a long-term education initiative that I think will take some time to produce results. But to the extent that our education systems have not been up to the task, then obviously they need to be improved. And then finally, I think telling the broader U.S.-European story, to the extent that Russia has an interest in breaking apart Europe, the European Union, disconnecting populations from their support for the European Union, or even NATO for that matter, think about then the extent to which the European Union or NATO or even the U.S. can better tell their story to those populations to make it harder for Russia to pull them apart.
So we would like to refer to another issue, not the disinformation campaigns per se, but violent extremism, which spreads on the same platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and which may also lead to terror activities, as we have witnessed during the last years. Is it possible to counter this phenomenon by those tools that are available for states to counter disinformation campaigns or any other methods? And to what extent do you think the states can affect the incentives of those who participate in violent extremism on the web?
Yeah, I think the Islamic State has sort of pointed the way in terms of how to use these technologies. What did the Islamic State do really well? First, they seem to really take advantage of Twitter as a platform to reach out to masses of audiences. And they not only had a compelling message that they could tell their audiences, a message that their audiences gravitated toward naturally, but they relied on key influencers within the Islamic State, fighters, to go out on Twitter and communicate on the organization's behalf, and so people could follow these fighters in real time, which was exciting, I imagine. They were able to use Twitter to recruit new members and to identify prospective recruits. So when someone might tweet in support of the Islamic State, they sort of automatically self-identify themselves as a potential recruit. I mean, when is the last time you've seen a terrorist organization be able to recruit at such a scale? And I think Twitter really allowed them to do that. And so when someone self-identified, they could reach out to that individual through direct message or direct chat and then recruit them or begin conversations. I think all those things sort of point a way forward for how to counter ISIS. One, relying on key influencers. The United States and others rely on efforts to train local activists to help better use social media to counter the Islamic State. There's also the use of advertising techniques, such as on Google AdWords, to identify individuals searching for extremist content and place ads in front of them. And then finally, I think a big key is on the Twitter, on the platform side, to suspend accounts that are violating terms of service, promoting violence, promoting terrorist organizations and what have you. And really, I think the biggest thing that reduced Islamic State's influence on the web was Twitter suspensions.
And regarding the phenomenon of the lone wolves, I mean, do you think anything can be done to identify them, to actually track their activities ahead, so to prevent terror activities?
Maybe. I think the challenge is if they're pretty decent at masquerading their activities, and most, I think, folks are smart enough now not to go live on Twitter and pronounce their affinity for the Islamic State, I think it's hard to do so, unless they're just bad at operational security, in which case they might be easy to track.
Okay, thank you very much.